Korach. It's a very, very extremely tragic parsha that by no means is unique. The lessons are relevant then as are today, and machlokes and standing up against Gedolei Torah and not valuing their opinion and not valuing their status is something which unfortunately creeps up again and again. We've just got to learn the parasha carefully and see some very, very fascinating insights here. Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who until now has been compassionate, he has been understanding to an extent, he has been a rachamon. When the Klal Yisrael did the Egel, he begged for mercy. For the Meraglim, he begged for mercy. And when it comes to a personal attack, Rabbi Herzl, the rabbi in there. Yeah, when it comes to a personal attack on Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and who said you were sent, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't seem to have any of this mercy. He doesn't seem to have any of this rachmonus. And in fact, he comes back and he, with a huge fiery response, that these people have to be proven that I was sent by Hashem, and these people should be punished in an unnatural form, and it will prove that if I die an unnatural, untimely death, that is something that proves that I am. Where is Moshe's rachmon? Speak to them, negotiate. Okay, maybe they should die in a magefa, maybe they should die peacefully in their sleep. They've got to have this dramatic event of this incredible, unseen before event. Well, why? What happened here? Well, why Moshe Rabbeinu getting? It seems quite out of character. Also, the Mefarshim ask, but it doesn't seem. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, you have to see within in a psukim, but it doesn't seem that Moshe Rabbeinu got any clear indication that this nes will happen. He doesn't see any nes is going to happen. Moshe Rabbeinu is basing his entire credibility on something unnatural, a nes is going to happen. Something that's never been seen before. And if it doesn't, Moshe Rabbeinu loses. If Moshe Rabbeinu loses, Klal Yisrael lose. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is not sent. And who knows if this was said, that was false. Moshe Rabbeinu maybe made other things up. The whole Klal Yisrael can basically, it's over. Who said it's going to happen? Hashem Baruch Hu said, "I'm going to make a nace." How did Moshe Rabbeinu have the
ability?
To do such a thing? It was gambling for the whole pot. Who said it's going to happen? And we say normally, "Ein Seimchen al nace." Furthermore, why did he need a supernatural thing to happen? Why could he not have davened that these people should die? People let them die peacefully in their bed. And tomorrow there's no opposition because these people simply are not alive anymore. Why did he need this supernatural nace to happen? So these are the questions that the Malbim asked. And I want to base it on an amazing story I found over here. It's a really lovely book. It's called Great Jewish Speeches of Rav Moshe Bamberger by Art Scroll. And it brings a story over here about Rav Lezer Gordon. Lezer Gordon was a Godel Batira. He was born in Russia. And he was appointed the Rav of Telz, and he became the Rosh Hashiva. He was Nifta. You know where he was Nifta? You know where he's Nifta? He's Nifta in London. In London, he went fundraising in London, and he was Nifta in he was Edmonton Cemetery in northeast London, in Edmonton. Yeah, he's very the whole story of how that happened. But Blazer Gordon came to London and was not treated with the correct respect. It's a story within itself. But Blazer Gordon decided in 1897, the winter of 1897, to instill in the yeshiva, in the Seder Hayoim, to put inside Musa. He was a Talmud of Yisrael Salanta, and decided to put Musa. And then, Musa was something that was new, it was something that was an invention, as it were, something the Bochrim were not used to, and you're dealing with Telz of Bochrim, dealing with Bochrim who, Tamir HaChomim, and boys who had confidence, and they put they did a terrible thing, they made an uprising against Rosh Hashivas. And they made it was a turbulence in the yeshiva. It was incredibly difficult for the anhala, and they made an uprising. And I just read what he says over here. It was a time of great turbulence in the history of the yeshiva, and it took a toll on the health of the faculty, heads of the famed institution. Reb Lezer, Lezer Gordon Rosh Hashiva, was impacted the most and fell ill on the evening of the uprising. Doctors were summoned to his home to monitor his fragile condition. The news of his sudden illness frightened the entire student body, and they quickly gathered outside his house to recite prayers for his recovery. On several occasions during the night, Rav Lezer lost consciousness. It was only towards morning he arrived. The Rosh Hashiva's condition had stabilized, As the sun began to rise, the boys returned to their sleeping quarters. Later that morning, an announcement was made in the yeshiva. Reb Lazer would come to deliver a talk concerning the recent unrest. Everyone was relieved that Rosh Yeshiva felt well enough to speak publicly. In the afternoon, he entered the Beis Medrash, weak, pale, and trembling. He slowly approached the pulpit. His candid message penetrated the hearts of his students. And this is word by word what he said. I'm just reading out a short part. My cherished sons, you know me well. I do not normally faint. I'm neither fragile nor weak by nature, but rather strong and robust. A while back, a terrible incident happened to me. My precious daughter, the apple of my eye, passed away in the prime of her life. My son-in-law, the Gaon Reb Lazer, Yosef Leib Bloch, a Rosh Yeshiva, became a widower, and his young children became orphans. This terrible tragedy shook the whole town and the yeshiva community. Everyone cried endlessly. I, however, gathered my strength and approached the pulpit to deliver my eulogy, my hesped for her. The purpose of my eulogy was not to induce tears, but already crying profusely. My goal in my remarks was to comfort the masses and to help everyone derive a lesson from the calamity. I succeeded in consoling the city, the yeshiva, and my closest relatives. In a loud and powerful voice, I spoke fiery words of Musa, while suppressing my personal heartfelt misery. Immediately following the week of Shiva, I commenced my regular shiur for 5 to 6 hours a day. I'll deliberate the most complex Talmudic topics and strive to achieve clarity with great enthusiasm, as if nothing happened to me. Many were amazed at how I can do this. And while that tragedy did not do any harm to my physical health or psychological well-being, the stress that I endured yesterday did succeed in sapping my strength, causing me to faint repeatedly. What is the difference between two events? The answer is very simple. The loss of my beloved daughter was a personal one. The tragic incident that occurred yesterday in yeshiva, on the other hand, not only affected me, but affected the entire world as well. This is Reb Lazer Gordon's message. What happens between his daughter died, that's a personal tragedy. But when a person stands up and tries to in any way challenge Gedolei Torah and challenge the validity of the Torah, Rachmana Litzlan, that is something that can never, Chalila, one can never get over. Says the Malbim, he says, the Torah was given with Kolos of Varakim. It was done through Nisim. It was done through people who had an enormous amount of prophecy that never had before. It was an incredible. They had nevuah. People had nevuah. They're spoken to by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They had nevuah, and Rebbeinu Shem had to do it in a way that it wasn't just given to Moshe Rabbeinu and then given over to other people. 600,000 men at that age, besides the women and children and all the neshamas, were there at Sinai, and it was given to them in a way that the Deira Deiris, this will never ever be challenged. That Torah was given at Sinai. It was never given. It was never ever be challenged. And that was done in such a way that Chalila v'chas, generations later, if people have a Suffolk, there is a real good argument to prove that absolutely the Torah was given. It wasn't just given to one, a few people. It wasn't just given to a few people in the desert. It was given to 600,000 people. Where exactly did the lie happen if it was not given then? It must have happened. To stand up and Eidah Haroah's voice, to stand up like Korach and to say, Moshe Rabbeinu, this was not a shlichus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You chose to make your brother the Kohen. You chose to put yourself in that position. You are not a shlichus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is basically telling us that while HaKadosh Baruch Hu stood at Sinai and gave the message of the Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu, is not necessarily 100% foolproof. I am standing and I'm challenging it, says Korach. If you challenge that, then this is not a personal tragedy. This is not Moshe Rabbeinu saying you're challenging me. This is a national tragedy. This is shaking the pillars of the entire Messiah of Yiddishkeit. Moshe Rabbeinu therefore cannot be quiet. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot possibly forgive such a thing. This is something that's going to have to be very, very clearly stamped out. This is going to be proven that Kodesh Baruch Hu chose him. So how is that done? It's got to be done through a nace. It's got to be done. But before that, we asked the question, how did Moshe Rabbeinu know that nace is going to be done? Why did he put himself into this gamble? Why did he say, Bria Chadosha, then a Kodesh Baruch Hu sent him in, if not, not? It's an incredible gamble. Who said a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to do that? So you can say Moshe Rabbeinu knew. How did he know? Says Yaakov Kamenetsky, a powerful vod, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu had nothing to lose. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a nace, then he's won. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make a nace, then he hasn't lost anything. Because right now, when you have Korach challenging his validity, challenging that he was sent as a message by Kodesh Baruch Hu, there is nothing left of Yiddishkeit at this stage. Yiddishkeit is over. There's nothing left. Ah, the rabbis say, big deal. Ah, who says the Torah is true? There's nothing left. Right now, they're standing on a precipice. They're standing on the edge of a cliff. It's all over. Unless Moshe Benu can prove that Torah was given to him through Rabbeinu Shalom and he is the Messiah, they have everything to lose. And therefore, Monoshech. If he wins, he wins. If he's lost, he's lost nothing more than right now. Because without doing an ace, it's exactly the same position, which is a very, very powerful vault. Says the Malbim, therefore, you had to make a nace that was at least the kind of nace that happened at Har Sinai. A nace that was supernatural, that is not shaykh, has never been seen before, just like it never been seen before, Har Sinai never been seen before. It had to be that kind of nace, something that was absolutely there in order to fill now this huge gap that has been put in the path of Yiddishkeit and Messiah to make sure that they understood clearly that this was nace from the Kodesh Baruch and there's no challenging that. That's why this nace had to come with just a dying bed. That's not enough. Dying in bed is very nice. No more machlekas. But you're left with a huge vacuum in believing that Torah min Hashemayim, believing that Moshe Rabbeinu is the God Lador, believing that it's Messiah midor dor, Moshe kibbul Torah misin Messiah liYeshua. That was something that we were missing, and therefore we needed a nace like a Kabbalah Satorah kind of nace in order for us to be able to stand back and say, that generation who saw the Torah being given, now believe that Torah is given at Sinai, and we can base ourselves and hook ourselves on that belief that took place then. So what was this big nace? So the Malbim asked, what was the big nace? Earthquakes happen very, very frequently. I mean, fire also comes. What's a big nace? Okay. What's a big nace? What was this supernatural Bria Chadosha? What? And there's never an earthquake beforehand. Who says, what's this Bria Chadosha? So he says a very, very interesting Kiddush. He says, Dasa Naviram were 1 mil away from Shevet Levi. It was spread over 3 mil. Right? 2,000 amas. Each mil is 2,000 amas. So 2,000 amas is what? 4,000 feet, right? Kilometer. Right? Kilometer, yeah? So it's a kilometer space between where Dasa Naviram were standing to where Bnei Levi were standing, and another kilometer space from Bnei Levi were standing to where Korach was standing outside the Ol Moed. So there's a space of 2 kilometers between what was going on. It's mashma that tiftach ha'aretz es piho. There was one mouth that opened up. One mouth that opened up and swallowed up Korach, Bnei Levi, and Dasan Aviram. No, the family of Korach, right? Bnei Levi? The family of Korach and Dasan Aviram. How did that happen? So he said what happened was an incredible thing. There was one mouth, there was like a mouth that can open up, different parts of the mouth can open up. There was a mouth that stretched these 2 kilometers, and where they were standing, it opened up, closed up. Where they were standing, it opened up, closed up. There was one mouth, one long split in the ground that opened up and just swallowed up those people and closed where the people were standing who weren't supposed to be pulled in there. They were not sucked in. An incredible nace, which means that Kodesh Baruch Hu works with enormous amount of Ashkocha Pratis to exactly determine where this Teva Ha'olam should open up. And he says, and he proves it from Pesukim, that's exactly what happened. And that was a Koyach. That had to be created, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Erech Shabbos Ben Hashmoshes, to Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world together with the Torah. And where it's necessary for the Torah to prove Torah's MS, the Bria will prove it to make sure that that is the case. That was a nace that happened over here. I just want to finish off with a beautiful Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer says, he asked a question as well, why was it not enough that they died natural death? Why did they have to die in a way that was supernatural? So he says a tremendous chiddush. At every stage of what he says, one can be done on it, one can judge, one can discuss this. But I say what he says. He says that there is a discussion amongst the Balim HaShkofa. When a person, Achameva Esrim, gets Scha or gets Oynesh, Rachmana Litzlan, is it finite or is it infinite? Is it a Netzach or is it only for a certain fixed period of time? Now I have to understand that Gehenum, yeah, it's for 11 or 12 months. There's different levels of what's called finite. I'm not going into that, and it's all different levels to this. But there's a discussion amongst that, is it finite or is it infinite? What's the two study Hasvara? On one hand, when a person does a Chet, well, a person does a mitzvah, he's doing something towards Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a davar nitzchi, and therefore something that is nitzchi has to be punished or rewarded nitzchi, right? On the other hand, a human being is finite. A human being is so finite that he lives 100 years, 110 years. For him to therefore be judged or given reward infinitely doesn't fit his profile. And therefore, the olim who say that it's only a finite punishment or a finite. So he says, there's no machlekus. It depends what the avera is or what the mitzvah is. He says, for mitzvahs are chelik elakai mimal. Why do we do a mitzvah? Because our neshama wants us to do the mitzvah. That's a chelik elakai mimal. That's a chelik of the Kodesh Baruch inside us wants us to do the mitzvah. So therefore, when you're doing a mitzvah, we're connecting ourselves to nitzchius. We're connecting ourselves to Ribbono Shel Olam. Schar for a mitzvah carries on forever and ever. That carries on forever and ever. But why should a person want to do an avera when he has an neshama tahira? And the kind of neshama should have to be tahira he. If it's tahoi, why should a person want to do an avera? Only because in the guf there's bahamias. There's a certain amount of animalistic drive within a human being that wants to do an avera. And therefore it's an animal part of him, it's a bahamias, it's a thing which is not nitzchi, it's a very finite part of him that wants to do the avera. And therefore a punishment is only done in a finite manner. He only gets a certain amount for the punishment. Baruch Hashem, it sounds great. However, there is one exception, and that exception is when one does a avera l'shem shemaim. When an avera and believes that he's doing the best possible thing, I am going to show Klal Yisrael who the right leader is, I'm going to stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu, he's doing an avera, and he's doing it l'shem nitzchius, for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam kaviyochol, that punishment carries on forever and ever, because now he is connected an avera to nitzchi. Exactly. Therefore, if they would have died a finite death, then the fact that they stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu, that was enough that they'd stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu to deserve that death, which is a chiddush in itself. I mean, it's not a chiddush, but it's very... Yeah, but you stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu, you deserve to die. But it wouldn't prove that Moshe, that it was against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It could have just proved that it was against Moshe Rabbeinu. And if it's against Moshe Rabbeinu, who is finite, they will get a finite death. They'll die in their beds. But because it's against Ribbono Shel Olam, and you say Ribbono Shel Olam never sent, and therefore you're trying to reconstruct what Kodesh Baruch Hu did or didn't do, we need to get something that is infinite, that the punishment is forever and ever, of them standing and saying Moshe Emes for Sarasa Emes to prove this point. Rabbi Yisrael, unfortunately, there's a pasuk in the Torah of Lisiya Kekorach V'Chadosoi, there's a Machlekes, Rambam and Ramban and the Sma and the Chinuch, whether this is an alav in the Torah or whether it's not alav. But the messages of standing up against Mesira, the messages of standing up against Gedolei Torah, the messages of thinking that one can outsmart the Mesira, is reborn every generation in a different form. We have to, as Hashem, learn from these parashas and understand that the Mesira that we have is so strong, is so the fundamentals have to be done in a way that we have absolutely no sophic, and that's why Moshe made his tremendous nace, and that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu had to do this nace, and that's why Moshe really knew that he'll have to do it, because otherwise there'll be no shaykhus to continue the Torah.